It's not unusual to be a get-random kind of thing. Anyways, welcome back. So welcome back to the Advanced
Bio- You'd be amazed at what happens during the breaks.
Yeah, it's not pretty. You really don't want to be here. Advanced PowerShell Desired State Configuration. And we've just finished making our own custom resource in those three functions, test, set, and get target resource. Now we're going to start to package things together. So just so I can make sure everybody in production is happy, take a look at the slide real quick, show you where we're at for this. We are now going into module three, packaging and deploying the custom resources. We're going to do a push and a pull deployment. Yep, we're going to do it all. And this kind of builds upon the pull deployments we talked about yesterday. So packaging and deploying. Yes, sir. What? Oh, yeah. The
pull.
Yeah, we're going to do pull. We're going to do pull. Okay, nobody get sorry. Take a look at my slide. Here's the module overview. We'll take a look at packaging a custom resource.
All the dads out there got the joke.
Yeah, I know. That's about it. We're going to do the push deployment and HTTP pull deployment and writing your resource into a configuration. I'm not sure what I meant by that, but we'll figure it out as we go. So packaging a custom resources. Resources must be located on the target in order to use them for a configuration. So folks, you saw this yesterday. We talked about this yesterday. We've got resources that we've just created, and that's fine for my machine. But when I write a configuration that gets sent out that needs that resource has to be on that target machine. Now, yes, you can manually deploy these, but we've got a better way. One of the coolest features to a pull server, an HTTP pull server, is that we can automate this process, and we always love things that are automation. So that's what we got to make sure of. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to do them both. So let's start off with manually deploying this. And the reason we do the manual deployment is, you know, if you're just doing a test environment, you can just copy it out. You don't need to have a pull server in a lab environment if you're just going to copy it out.
Yep.
So it makes it quick and easy. So in this case, I'm going to bring up, this is actually really important. I want to bring up the manifest, and I want to talk about this for a second.
Yes.
This is going to come very important really quick, and I've got lots of questions about this myself. But the module version number is very, very important. You need to know this, and this is mainly for the pull that we're going to do, not for the push, but this module version number is very important. What basically is going to happen is we're going to take this module version that's in the manifest,
yep,
and we're going to make this part of the file name when we put this on the pull server, right?
Mm-hmm.
And give it a checksum, and it'll get sent out.
Yep.
If I edit this module,
yeah,
how does the target system know to go and get that module again?
Well, do we have them off from a previous run?
No, but we will soon.
Well, let's create them off, and I'll show you.
Okay. Well, we'll come back.
Here's the trick.
Yeah.
So when you do an edit pass, and you say service, blah, 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 or my service, and da-da-da-da-da, and remember, you run that, and then PowerShell generates them off. When PowerShell generates them off, it had to figure out, well, my service, what is that? Well, that's actually some MSFT underbar, you know, some WMI class. And we go and we grab the module number that was used to create it. And so then it says, it's not just some, oh, I want this thing. It's like, I want this version of this thing. And so then when you go and say, make it so, we check, do you have that version? And if so, happy days. If not, we got to go find it.
Yeah, and the reason why we're going to hit this topic a couple of times is that this is very confusing for a lot of folks as they get started with DSC is, you know, they think of versioning one way in their heads, which has been used traditionally in their environment. Now we're talking about how DSC needs to use versioning. So the module number version that's in the manifest is going to matter as we go through this, and we'll show you how this all works. A couple of other things I'm just going to show you real quick. One of the first things I'm going to do is kind of prepare this. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't do the push yet. That's why we're a little bit ahead of the game. Let's do the push real quick. Guys, this is really easy. I'm just going to copy it out to the program files, Windows PowerShell. You already get the idea on the push. This will make it available, and I'll just show you, get DSC resource, just to show you that on my local machine that I'm using for development, I just pushed it out to it, and my Well, there's my feature. Again, you're right, Dave. I may have to set the debugging thing now. I'm actually doing it in the next module, I think. But, well, I may have
to set it. The quick thing you can do is just to restart WMI. That whacks
really?
It. Yeah,
oh.
It's not the best practice, but it works. So what I do, restart.
Oh.
Yeah, restart service.
And it's
Win MGMT, and you got to say minus force.
Let's see what happens here. Oh, now I'm still getting a red message. I wonder what that message is.
Let's see.
The second sim class definition was
not. Oh, so you got a problem. So you have two problems. One was you had a problem.
One is I have a problem.
And then you get the caching.
Yeah, remove redundant definition. That's funny. Not as in funny, haha. Well, let's see if we can fix this real quick. Not a big deal, guys, on this particular resource, but when I was generating earlier, I may have run too many lines. Oops, this isn't what I want. In the need to get there, where am I going? I'm going to scripts, DSC module 3. Here, let me manually copy this over. This is a clean version of it, so let me just copy this guy over to program files, modules.
While he's doing that, I'll just remind you of the issue. The issue is that WMI loads and hosts PowerShell, and it loads the modules in. So just as when you load a module in, if you modify the underlying file, you still have an in-memory copy, so you're not going to get that underlying feature. So what you have to do is you have to remove that module and load it in again. Or there's import module minus force. Now, you don't always want to do that, LCM, because otherwise it's very expensive. And so what we do is there is two ways to do it. What we showed you right now was the brute force,
the brute
hammer,
force.
Just whack. And you go and you whack WMI by saying restart service, win MGMT, minus force, right? That causes any dependent services to also shut down. It then restarts WMI, and by doing that, it then brings everything in afresh. The other way, which I think we're going to show later, is that you change your local configuration manager to be in debug mode. And there's a number of debug modes, all is the typical one. And what it does is, in this debug mode, it will always bring in a new module. And this is something you don't really want to do in production or your production servers, but it is something you want to do as an author and in your development servers.
Well, you know, at the moment, we're going to live with it till I figure out what I did to make that module go bump in the night. But we'll still be able to use this, I believe, without any other issues other than this one. I'll see if we run into the service thing here while we look at it. But yes, so this was the brute force. Now let's take a look at doing the pull server, and I'll fix my little module issue here on the next break. So show module, this is what we started out with here, going into the PSD and looking at that module version number.
They're asking if you put it in Windows. Were you in the right place?
Was I in the right place? Program files, Windows, PowerShell, modules, MV8.
Oh, you said, but did you put it previously in Windows where you shouldn't have? Remember?
Great question. And the answer is I did put a feature in there, but I also removed it. But if I tell you what, though, I'll do this. I'm going to do this real quick because, very good point, I may have not removed it when I put it out there. See, this is why you don't play with the place you're not supposed to be playing with. And I lauded the law, and I just went out there and did it and should have known better. So let's all see together if, PS, desired state configuration, DSC resources. And you're right.
Ooh.
I forgot to remove it. Who gets brownie points because whoever did that.
Martin.
You are awesome.
Yes, rock stars. Again, the benefit of the community.
And thank you so much for helping us out during this live event so that I don't turn green and fall over. So let's get this out and we'll try it again.
Jason needs all the help he can get.
All the help I can get. Oh, so let's see if that fixed our.
I'll help you, Mr. Jason.
Great. We're back to the hand puppets. Got to move your dragon. So, anyways, back over here. Now it works. So, Thank you so much, everybody. Community at community
are
service.
You saying move like Jagger?
Well, I think that's what the real lyrics are, but my daughter hears it and sings it as
move your dragon.
Move your dragon.
Not move like Jagger.
Not move like Jagger. Move your dragon, because she doesn't hear so well. So it's
that's and perfect.
She yells at the top of her lung, move your dragon, move your dragon.
Got it.
So
I had no idea what you were talking about, as is typically the case.
Great.
But
it's typically the
it
case.
Just finally, like light dawns on Marblehead, I figured it out.
That's what I like, is keep everything cryptic so nobody understands a word I'm saying.
Okay.
So now that we have that fixed, and thanks once again to the community for fixing that, let's take a look here at putting it on a pull server again, back to the manifest. You got to have that version number and take a look what I'm going to do. Yes, I'm going to do this. Oh, the infamous old way of doing this. And I have a, what we're going to do is we need to save that module with a very special name. So let me open this up. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this MVA, pretend you didn't see that, because that was out there after something else that you didn't see that. That's not there. That's not there. I need to take this module that I have, and just to show you, that's my resources, all that kind of good stuff. I'm going to take this module, and I need to save it as a zip if I'm going to put it on the pull server. So I'm going to...
Cash Foley points out, finger in the eye. Remember, I was saying, why are you doing that? That's a bad thing to do. That's like shoving a finger in your eye.
I
demonstrated why you don't want to do that. Correct, Cash. Finger in the eye.
Finger in the eye. So I'm going to do a compressed zip folder, and it can't create it here. Do you want to place it on the desktop? Well, of course, why can't you create it? Because I'm not in as an admin on that stupid thing. But now I shouldn't have deleted the other one, right? So I'll put it on the desktop for right now. And here's what I want to do is I want to make sure that this has the name of underscore and that version number that's in that manifest. Now, there is a new way. It used to be you needed to do the right-click zip thingy.
Yeah.
When this first came out.
Yeah.
So what y'all, what I was just showing here in the graphical, although I needed to start this here. I'm going to start this as an admin. So I thought I did start this as an admin. I'm in an admin in there. Should have let me do it. Go out here. And... the reason I was going out here to show you guys is that when this first came out, this is the way you needed to compress it. If you did it another way, like through .NET, it didn't quite work out so well.
Yeah.
And that was kind of one of the buggy kind of things about it. Mm. Now, I understand that there's, and I haven't had a chance to try this, but I understand that with the February release, we've got some archive commandlets. Like
archive commandlets, exactly.
Yeah, some archive commandlets. So
let's take a look.
You want to take a look?
Sure. How would you find out? Get command, star arc. Oh, more archive. And so there we go. We got compress archive and expand archive. Show command, compress archive. And there you go.
So we can possibly use those rather than doing it the old mechanical way.
Yeah, exactly. So you give it a path, a destination path, and then a compression level. Optimal, no compression, fastest. And then you can even update things, you know, update, / update, or dash update, and then uncompress them.
See, I think this is a really nifty way of doing it now, and I believe that will work just fine for doing our modules. So
here, let's just check this. Let's see. So compress, archive, or compress, archive. Archive minus path / temp minus verbose for lots of fun dot
DR. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, where did I go? Cannot be included with this extension. Okay, so let's do it to mkdir temp 2 bunk temp destination path c temp 2 all right temp 2 hey. Oh, there it is, temp 2. Oh, I see, temp 2.zip. I see,
awesome.
And so then I Temp2.zip. Voila. There it is.
Outstanding. So now, if you want to automate this process that we're showing to you manually, you now have commandlets that will help you create these zips in an automated fashion, and you could have it pull the module version number out of the manifest and automatically assign it to the file name when you make the zip. So I think that'd be a great little additional function to make in order to make this process easier.
Yeah. Automation.
Automation. So let me show you. I have the module here, and I want you to see how it's created. When I first started doing this, this was one of the things that kind of confused me quite a bit, was putting the underscore and the version number in the name.
Now, yeah, the first two elements of the version numbers.
The first two elements of the version numbers.
Yeah, and that's the version really number can be quite large. And you'll see we're going to modify the way we do this right now. But in general, the practice is just do the first two version numbers.
And I have seen a lot of customers, when they get started with this, they're thinking of using their internal process where they'll say, we have this version, and then they want to do another underscore for a different team version, and then an underscore. And it's like, we can't do that. This naming convention is very specific, right?
Yes.
And it may be done differently in the future, but it's very specific, so you've got to follow the rules of...
And we should have a good blog post on how to use versions, and we'll probably do that after we, you know, finalize our version. But in general, the first number is for breaking changes, and the second number is for minor versions, and then, like, the third number is for, like, build numbers. You know, and so that those happen very frequently and do not convey, they express identity, like changes, but not any like semantic changes. You know, the dot, you know, 1.1 says, oh, it's different than 1.0, but it's, if you dealt with one, you're going to deal with this, it's fine. It's, you change the high level version when you're going to have a breaking change.
And I think that information alone is very helpful to a lot of people, because they don't understand what the numbers should be used for when they're making their version settings.
Yeah, you know, it was one of the architectural mistakes that we made, honestly. You know, I was arguing heavily at the time, we have to be clear about the contract conveyed by the version number. And at the time, and this was, by the way, this is a .NET conversation, at the time the answer was, too many teams are already telling people what those things mean, and they didn't take a stand. And frankly, I think that was just a mistake. I think we as a company should have said, here's how version numbers work. I don't care what your previous company or whatever team told you, here's the way it should work, and have everybody on that same page. Now, kudos to Mark Rusinovich. He is taking a stand on what version numbers mean, the contract implied by those version numbers, and, you know, hats off to him. He's doing exactly what an architect should do. And by the way, there's a joke. I saw this great podcast, or listened to a great podcast by Nathan Myhrvold, and he talked about leadership. And he said leadership was taking people where they wouldn't otherwise go, okay? People weren't going to, you know, have a standardized contract around versioning. So Mark's leading us to do that. And Myhrvold pointed out, he says, if you have a parade and it's going down the street, if you run and get in front of the parade, those people really aren't following you. That's not leadership. Leadership is taking them a direction they wouldn't otherwise
go.
And so right now there really is sort of randomness in the use of versioning. No contract really well implied. And Mark's leading in this area, so hats off to him.
I think this is valuable information, especially to a lot of customers that are looking at development teams, IT pro teams, working on custom resources, trying to deal with how they may be using their version numbering. You're probably going to want to adopt, for DSC at least, the Microsoft versioning standards going forward. So this is definitely a hot news space to watch for this versioning. Now, mechanically...
Well, yeah, and actually, not many people may know about Mark Rusinovich. He's an engineer at Microsoft. You might not have heard of him. He's up-and-comer. I think he's going to do well.
He might take him a while to...
I'm mentoring him.
Oh, there you go. You're mentoring
him.
You know, I bet you he really appreciates that, too.
Yeah.
So send Mark a tweet or something and say good luck with the job. Yeah. So back to the demo. So here's what we're going to do. I've got that zip file right now, and I'm going to copy it to the pull server. Now, you remember from yesterday, the pull server is, I've got an HTTP pull server. We built that from the previous DSC MVA. And the folder that is on the pull server that we want to put this on is was configured when we set up the pull server. And so that's going to be Program Files, Windows PowerShell, DSC Service Modules. Now, we yesterday, or in the previous MVA, we put configurations in a folder called Configurations. There's also one called Modules, and that's where you put your custom modules in so that they can get automatically deployed to the target. So I'm going to go ahead and copy that there. Now, when you copy the module out there, you also need a checksum. And we talked about this checksum and why we needed the checksum yesterday. But Jeffrey, do you want to quickly remind everybody what the checksum was there for?
Yeah, checksum's all about efficiency. If you recall, the issue was how does a client talk to a server to know that he's got the right version of the configuration? One answer is to take his configuration and say, here's my configuration, is it the right version? So one, these configurations can be quite large, so you're sending a lot of information. Then the server has to take it and compare it against what it should be to then say yes or no. So we don't want to do that. Instead, what we do is it reaches up and says, here's who I am, and here's a checksum of my configuration. A checksum is very efficient. By the way, it's very efficient to convey because it's relatively small. And you just calculate it once and you store it. So you take that and you send it up and say, here's my configuration. And then so too on the same side. It knows what your configuration is. It checksums that. It's able to do a very quick evaluation to say, yes, you're in state or you're not. And if you're not, then it transfers down. So it's a way of being very, very efficient. The checksum is a proxy for the configuration itself to facilitate efficiency.
I think that's great. And if you actually want to see what that checksum looks like in the previous DSC MVA, Jeffrey showed it to us, all that kind of stuff. So this is why we're making the checksum. So I'm going to make that checksum real quick and show you what the folders look like out on the structure on the pull server, the HTTP pull server. You'll see that this is what you're looking for. You've got your module with the version number in it, and you should then see that checksum. And I'll just open it up. That's what the checksum looks like. And so make sure that it's in the correct path. That's one of the common mistakes. It's in the path that was set up for the pull server. And now that it's out there, well, let's go make a configuration and see if it actually gets sent to a target. Now, I'm going to check real quick my server 2. And the reason I'm checking is I forgot what state it was in, the LCM was in, after yesterday. So I'm going to check him really quick. And he is in pull. So let's see. He is in pull for that web resource that we set up yesterday for DSC HTTP, and that was the one that I had configured for the HTTP pull, so we're looking really good.
Yep.
So let's just check. On server 2, we're going to see what the status of the service is, and then, of course, it's currently stopped, so we're going to make a configuration that'll turn it to running using one of our new resources.
Hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha. And so we'll open this up. I've got configuration demo service. I'm going to import that module so I can grab hold of those resources. And I want to point something out. If you're getting like a red tilde thing under this and the resource isn't showing up correctly, could be because you don't have it locally installed on your development machine. So I'm going to have that import, that module name, MVA demo.
Node's going to show them what that looks like. Like put here's the way I do it.
Oh, and just I have a boo-boo in here. Fix the boo-boo. Oh, no, I don't have
equal
bits. Okay. No, that's fine. So you want to see what
that looks like? Up to MVA demo and just add like a 2. No, module name, MVA demo.
Oh, yeah.
Just add a 2, and then
let's have a two.
Doesn't exist. And so that's what that's going to look like.
Yeah, exactly. Good.
And then show them the message.
Wish I would have thought of that. Yeah, let me show you the message. Unable to load the module.
Module not found. There
module
you go.
Not found. This is actually something very helpful, especially as you're working with your modules, making sure you get them copied out.
By the way, the other thing you can do here, so notice here we're bringing a module name and you're bringing everything. Now, you might not have remembered this mapping of module, of the fact that you know you want an MVA service, but you had to remember that it was in the MVA demo.
Yeah.
Right? So did you know that you could, so whack module name.
Let's get rid of that.
And you can just say dash name. Say you can choose this, and then you say MVA service.
Oh, we can just grab the resource. Oh, let's see here. Dash name, And
M. V as in victory.
MVA.
Service.
Oh, he got really slow on me all of a sudden.
Okay.
Oh, and so I'm
something
just
slow here, that's for sure.
Okay,
so yeah, so then you don't have to remember. You if you remember the resource, but don't remember the module, of course you can look it up if you want, or you can just say, here are the resources that I want.
And actually this is a really, really important point, because the first thing that in my brain is, I'm thinking of resources when I'm working with
this. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not thinking of what the module that contains the resources. So actually I think that's a great example. In fact, such a great example, I'm going to leave it just like that. So,
well, actually, I'm not sure. Can you give multiples?
Oh, do you want to see if it'll do? Well, yeah. Does the, let's take a look. Oh, I love exploring stuff. Oh, it looks like it only takes one.
Takes one, so you got to give it a, okay, yeah, okay.
Well, that's fine.
It's an opportunity to improve.
Now I forgot which one we were working. Oh, MVA service.
Hello.
Yeah, hello, McFly. So let me go ahead and save this.
Jason McFly helmet.
Jason McFly helmet. And what I'm going to do is, you'll see down here, I'm going to create the configuration. I'm going to put it out here underneath config. So let's go ahead and create it. And go back over here. And we're going to start that config. Now, it's true, folks, at this point, I'd take that configuration in a real environment, and I would go through the process that we showed you in the previous MVA of putting it up on the pull server. But I don't want to wait for the pull server right now, and we showed that to you yesterday, so I'm just going to send the configuration right out to the S2 machine. If the machine then is going to try to run that resource, it's not going to find the resource. If we're lucky and I've done everything correctly, it's going to go out and grab that resource. So let's see what happens. I'm going to hit F8. And an internal error occurred. You know what? I think I may know why. Let's try this. I'm going to change this back to
module name.
Module name.
Is that a bug?
It might be. Let me try real quick.
Just to remind everyone, we are using the February MFW. And as Jason said, please mind our dust.
Mind our dust.
So there might be some issues here.
So let's try that. Oh, I need to regenerate it. Let's remake the config. Da-da-da. And let's try that.
By the way, if you, as a customer, if you ever get an internal error occurred, send that to me. I mean, that's just the worst thing
okay,
ever.
Here.
Everybody except Jason.
I don't know why I just got this.
Happen again?
Yeah, it happened again.
I would restart Win, restart Win Manager.
It's coming from the LCM, right, on S2?
Yeah, restart it on that machine.
Oh, restart. Oh, on. Okay, so ICM S2. Restart service. What was it? WMI?
No, Win.
Oh, Win. Oh, that's right. Win.
MGMT minus force.
T minus force. And let's try that again. Also, this gives us an opportunity, if possible. Oh, let me try something else real quick. This also gives us an opportunity to kind of show this commandlet, which I don't think we showed yesterday. I'm going to remove. We talked about it, any other DSC configuration documents that may be out there.
Okay, yeah. So have we actually showed them how that structure works?
No, if you want to show them what the structure is?
Let's see if I've got that here. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, on me? Yeah, okay, so CLS. So here we're going to walk behind the curtains and show you how things really work. So CD to Windows, System 32, / configuration. Okay, so this is where DSC does its glory, okay? So you see here, current.mof, any guesses what that would stand for? That's right, that's your current configuration. previous .mof. Any guesses as to what that is? Oh, we didn't talk about that. So we talked about a start DSC configuration, but check this out. Get command star DSC config. Okay. Look here. Restore DSC configuration. So show command restore DSC configuration. Okay, look here. Okay, so no parameters, tells you which machine. And what that's gonna do, like say you went and pushed something and you said, oops, here's what really happens. We take the command, when you do a start DSC configuration, we take that MOF and we put it in this directory, okay? And we give it a name and it's called pending.mof. Now notice there is no pending.mof here. That means that we're not currently doing a convergence cycle. So we have this pending.mof, and then the LCM goes and makes it so. And when it succeeds, it takes the current.mof and renames it. So we have current.mof. It takes that and renames it to be the previous.mof, and then takes pending.mof and makes it current.mof. Okay? So here, now these are kind of funky, but ps edit, what is it, current.mof. Okay, so here's the current MOF and ps edit previous.mof. Okay, so as you saw, the different size, current was generated by JSON on this day. The previous one was done by JSON at this time. Looks about the same time. No, they aren't. 15:14, 12:20. Okay, so if it turned out that, hey, Jason just got this all wrong, that was a mess, what are we doing? What you do is you do a restore DSC configuration. Now, restore DSC configuration, how might that work? Well, you got it. You take the previous.mof, you make a copy of it, and you call it pending.mof. You then make it so, and when it makes it so, you put that to be the current.mof. So again, if you recall, one of the principles we had here was the DevOps mindset. The DevOps mindset was, if you recall, the problem being scale times complexity exceeds our skill set. So because we want to scale, right, cloud-based everything, we want to have very large scale, we have to drive the complexity down in order to be able to succeed. So we wanted to have a mechanism that was very, very simple. So we have, guess what? We have a very mechanism that's very, very simple. It's all here, it's all very transparent, and all done through these files. So the meta configuration, I've got a metaconfig.mof. PS edit metaconfig.mof. Okay, well there you go, that's nice and chewy, okay. But that's the configuration of that. And so you can read these things. Now there, you go and you say, oh well, configuration status. So you go to change directory to configuration status, dir, and you see these. Okay, so you got four runs, ps edit, one of these configurations. And again, let me see if I can actually do something with this. Okay, I don't know if you saw what I did there. So this is some funky encoding, right? And so what I did was I just selected it, right? So what you do is you just select it, and then you just do replace, and you replace all, and then you can read it. Don't save it that way. It wants to be in the format it wants to be. But this was an instance of a meta configuration. Tells you what happened. Instance of resource in desired state configuration. Oh, this is when you were doing the new var stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And here, remember source info?
Oh, there
so
it is. Yeah.
We were able to track down exactly where this had come from. And then here.
Oh, module version.
Module version. So we're telling you what version of the module it came from. So we know lots of details of exactly what happened, where it came from, and why we're doing things. So that's what's going on here.
See, that's very useful and helpful during the troubleshooting, especially in stuff that we're doing right now.
Yeah, and actually, let's see if I got this right. So get DSC configuration status minus all. Let's make this smaller. Minus OVA. Okay, One, two, three, four. Dir. One, two, three, four. Okay, see any? Okay, let's see if those dates look right. 9-13? 9-13. Okay. 12-22? Okay, well, close enough.
Close enough.
Okay. So the point is that, again, we want to have very simple mechanisms. The command lines map to file abstractions, which are very easy for you to go use Explorer and go understand all the inner workings. So you're not going to have the situation where there's the, you know, the Mordocks and the Eloi, you know, Lord of the... Sorry, that was a time was travel.
Okay.
Time machine.
Oh, you're going, what?
everybody will be able to understand the inner workings of how things work. In fact, we should probably do another follow-up on that just to give you all the details.
Yeah, that would be good. Oh, and by the way, there was an old document I must have done it in the previous MVA. Got rid of it and take a look here.
Was it one of these in this space?
Yeah.
One of these MOFs?
Yeah.
See, that's the point. Because it's a very simple mechanism. Like, again, let's talk about that DevOps mindset. Why is that so important? And the answer is, look, this is a very high stress situation, right? We got
thousands of people are out there
watching, and any kind of mess up, it's like tense. Well, guess what? That's like a production environment, right? You're trying to deliver a service, and when something goes wrong, the tension goes really high. You got to get that problem solved. So what's the role of simplicity in that? Well, when it's complex, when something goes wrong, how do you solve it? And the answer is you take a look at what you're seeing, and you say, what could cause that? And you say, it could be this, could be this, could be this. And then you investigate, you gather data, and then you evaluate your hypotheses, base them on probability, generate new ones, and then investigate, et cetera. With a complex system, when you see what could go wrong, one of two things happen. One is, I got no idea. I mean, who knows how that thing,
yeah.
Who knows how that thing works? Or, good Lord, it could be this, it could be this. The number of things is very, very large. So it makes debugging very, very hard. Problem resolution, very, very hard. With simple mechanisms, it's got, look, there's only so many things. Like, you ever had a VW bug? Like, apparently, I didn't, but apparently those were, like, incredibly easy to work on. Like, anybody could open those things up, you know, use a kitchen knife and like, repair your engine, because they were just so incredibly simple and therefore so reliable. So that's what we want here, is we want something that's just incredibly simple. You had a problem.
Right.
You opened up the trunk, brought out your kitchen knife, changed something.
And it, you know what? It so happens that, as you pointed out yesterday, complexity doesn't scale.
Yeah.
Simplicity does. And this is a great example of going, hey, he's giving me some weird internal error. What could it be? And he had a pending document stuck. Get rid of that. And wham.
Bonk. Yeah.
Bonk.
And a lot of people have asked in the forum, hey, what about how does this relate to DGP or to SCCM? It's one of the points. This is an extremely simple mechanism. Those other things, not so extremely
simple.
Simple.
So take a look. I actually got it to run. So here's here's the verbose output, and I want you to see the verbose statements that I made in there as well. So as it starts to run, need to configure status is not correct, and then from the set when he went to there was the test, and then he goes to the set and he says, look, changing service status. Nice simple messages in my case. And now if we check that service status real quick. Oh, and I'll show you that out on S2, the reason that this worked was because he brought the module down. This is a S2. So he got our custom module from our pool server and brought the module down. And that's how he could run the config. And we'll see here. There he's running. Yay.
So let's bring show them off.
Show the moth.
CD into current. Into configuration from here.
Into
configuration.
I'm lost. What do you want me to do?
Click, 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 click.
Click, click, click. What? Click
in the blue screen. In the happy blue screen.
Click in the happy blue screen. I feel much better there.
CD configuration.
But it's
on config.
I get what you're saying now. I'm like, well, what are we going? This is on the wrong machine, though. We should go to the MOFON S2. Let's do this. Hey, PowerShell lets us do whatever we want, whenever we want. So we're going to enter a PS session on over there. We'll go over to Windows. CD System 32
configuration.
And configuration. Oops.
Oh, and then we'll show the craziest thing. People who haven't been paying attention to PowerShell version 5, put your seatbelts on. Okay, so what do we do? We are now, Jason's on one machine,
and he's remoted
to another machine. Now we have this thing. There's this file, and I want to look at that file.
There's this file, and I want to look at this file. And you're going where I think you're going. This is one of the coolest things.
Yeah, show them. Put your seatbelt on. This is the greatest.
I want to look at, so notice I'm typing PS current. Edit, and we want current.
PS Edit. Now look at that. Look at that.
Hey, guys. Look at it. It says remote file current. And the thing is, you might be saying, yeah, so what? It's just read only.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, it's not. Ha ha ha! Remotely editing files on other remote systems. This is totally cool. This is also why you want to read the notes that come with the February preview of WMF5, because that's in those notes to remind you that
it's one of my favorite things, and it makes managing remote headless systems so much easier. You really just needed this.
Yeah, absolutely. And so here's the current moth that's out in that folder.
Oh, and so the point was go down and show the module. You know, like module is sort of what I was showing them. So what happened was this was the document that the LCM got. It saw that the MVA on line 10, it has this resource ID, MVA service bits. It then looks at the module name on lines 14 and 15, the name and the module. And that's what it uses to go find the code to make this so. It went to look for that code and it couldn't find it. So then if you took a look at the meta configuration, you'd see there's a meta configuration MOF there. You'll see that it says, hey, if you can't find something, here's where to go get, here's where you go look to find modules. And so that's the web service. And so then it knows how to go talk to that web service using a REST API saying, I'm looking for version this of module that. May I please have it? It then sends down the zip. It unzips that, deploys it, and then says, now I have it. So I load it and I go. This is what we talked about, page faulting the management agent in. And those are the mechanisms. Again, super simple. The MOF, when you compile it, tells it exactly what's required. You send it, it's either there or it's not. If it's not, you have all the information you need to go get it. So then you've been configured to say where to go get it. You go get it and you use it. It's just super glorious. It is. I just love
it. No, it is. It really is.
And simple. Simple.
So the concepts again here were to take your module that you've already made and you've tested and to zip it up, putting in the module version on it, putting it out on a pull server, now importing that module when you write the configuration, and now you can deploy all your custom modules. Following those version rules, which I know might be different than the rules you haven't currently been using in your own company. And of course, stay up to date with Microsoft on how they're defining those version numbers. That's going to be really helpful as well. So we got it all to work. The only last thing I have to do here.
By the way, I'm getting a correction from the audience. Yeah. So Crash Monkey used to own a VW Karmann Ghia, and he corrects me. He says, actually, to repair them, you required a fork and a knife.
Oh, for the Karmann Ghias, but I think for the buses, it only took a knife.
So difference of data.
Last thing to do is to check on my DSC configuration. Guys, we've already seen that it works, and I just wanted to run it so that you can see that. Oh, don't embarrass me now. That I wrote that get target resource section to report on this information. So I can actually stop the service. So it says ensure bits is running. I could stop the service. It would be out of state and it would give me what its current is. So we've got the get target resource working. Remember, we're processing by running the test over and over and over again. And then when the test is no longer true, when it's false, it's going to run the set to make the change, and then we're done.
Have we shown them the compare?
I don't think we've shown them a compare.
Let's show them the compare because we have a couple minutes.
Okay. Or you want me to? Okay, I'll show them the compare.
McFly.
I got that. What am I showing them now? Oh,
okay,
by the way,
so
it was all
back
over
to
there.
Configuration.
Oh, okay. On S2? Or
No. Oh. Go to your authoring machine.
Okay. So we'll exit
let's
out.
Let's bring up the configuration that generated the current.
Exit. Here we go.
Yeah.
And go to the configuration that, where did I put that?
Is that it?
Yeah,
that's good. Okay, so let's just change. Let's keep that. Let's change service status to be stopped.
Stopped.
Okay, now let's create that.
Doom, 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 doom.
Okay, now we want to see some more blue there. Make that bigger.
Oh, see some more blue.
Okay, so now we have this configuration, and we're going to compare it against the world. Now, we're not setting it. We're just comparing it.
Oh, okay.
So then you
okay.
do compare configuration, compare DSC configuration.
Pair DSC configuration.
Dash. And computer name, S2.
S2.
Dash. Path.
Path.
Or actually, you know, go to reference configuration. That one's
better. Ah, the reference, yeah. Reference configuration.
And then that.
Which is what? Scripts.
DSC.
DSC 2. Ooh, mod 3. Oh, wait a minute. No, sorry.
And you give the name here, the full name.
Oh.
No, let's see. Now, let me draw a distinction here. There's reference configuration and there's path. Okay, so let's get rid of this. Get rid of the yes 3. Can I type?
Oh, yep.
how hard can it be?
This is the most amazing thing to watch on camera if because this is what you do when you're live.
Yeah, exactly. Get out of there. Okay,
move.
So I'll show you. So first is let's do this. Go to end. We'll get rid of this. We'll come here and we'll say path. Now, the question is, let's make sure it works first before I explain it, path. Okay, so what that did was it said, I'm working against S2, and so I give this path. And so what it did was it went to this directory, and it found the config for S2, okay? It went and did it, and it said, resources not in desired state, okay? But the point I really wanted to make was, imagine this. Let's see, do you have a temp? mkdir/temp. Okay, so you have one. Okay, great. So now let's take that, where was it? Let's take this. Imagine I could create this script. So what that says is, if you wanted to run this test against 1,000 machines, you'd have to have a specific name for each one of confile for each one of those 1,000 machines. But what we're going to do is we're going to take this, we're going to say copy this to c:temp:test.moth. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to compare it and I say, what the heck was the name of it? Reference configuration, c:temp, and I give the moth name. Okay?
Oh,
so in the past, the computer name was used to generate the moth when I give path. Here, I don't want to do this. I've generated one test configuration, and now I'm going to configure
you
it
can put in
test it against thousands of machines.
Multiple computer names. Got it,
exactly.
Got it. Okay, this is
so
cool.
It comes back and does that. Now, here, let's explore that. I say $x equals this. And then, let's do this. Show object, my favorite. Show object, $x. So let's have some fun. Okay, using the amazing. It says, in desired state, false. Resources in desired state, nothing. Resources not in desired state, this one. Okay, well, let's take a look at that. Resources is 1. You take a look.
Oh, look at that.
Here, MVA demo.
The module version that it has. Oh,
gives you
wow.
everything. Yeah. Including how long it takes to check. How's that?
Wow.
And then it tells you again where. This is telling you, look here, where it was created from. This is the configuration script that generated the MOF. So it tells you
everything.
Tons and tons. Everything.
So not only are we making the comparison against a bunch of machines at once from the reference config, but now we can drill into it and troubleshoot why maybe one box is not in its configured state, or, you know, did it get the wrong module version or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a nice thing. Like, you might want to have some policies that you don't want to necessarily set. Like, some, one thing some people have talked about is to say, hey, I don't want to go set these policies. What I'll do is I'll author things, and then I'm just going to run a compare, okay? And running the compare is going to tell me what's in state and out of state, and then I'll go manually fix that, okay? Because then I'm working on my model, right? These are production systems. I don't want to necessarily just convert over. So then I run that, and then at some point I say, hey, this looks like it's the right model, and things are in good state. Now I'll do a set. And then when they do the set, what they'll do is they'll say, hey, I want to set it in apply and monitor mode. So again, I set it. I know that it's going to work because I just did a comparison.
Right.
So that's going to work. But then it monitors for it automatically and tells us when things are out of sync. Again, I monitor, you know, fix it by hand. And then I was like, yeah, I'm comfortable enough. I'm going to change the policy to now monitor, apply, and auto repair. I forget the name of the syntax. So it's kind of step by step. You can build trust in the artifacts that you created.
See, and that's what makes this really amazing, is that nowhere else would we get this information than here. That was actually really good with compare. I love that.
Isn't it?
I love that. Folks, let's just kind of clean up, because we're going to end this module here. A slide I wanted to make sure that I gave you, and production will probably yell at me. Here's the HTTP pull slide, just to remind you about zipping up the module with the version number and then where to locate it. And don't forget the checksum on that. And then what we did is we created our own configuration and sent it out. And that's how you package and deploy your module. This is really great, because you don't have to manually do it. You just put it on a pull server and everything is good. This was awesome. Thank you so much for all the additional information. That was fantastic. That's awesome. All right, anyways, take a quick break. When you come back, we're doing something else. We'll figure it out.